Movie BS with Aaron Snyder.
Jeff and Eric were walking through the woods one night. That's right. When they saw something giving off an eerie light, so bright. Turned out it was an alien meteorite. That's right. And its radiation gave them superhuman insight. So bright.
And on that day, they vowed to use their powers for good instead of evil, swearing to protect mankind from the vile clutches of their evil arch-nemesis, Bad Cinema. And if you find yourself in a bind at the multiplex, not sure what to watch, you too can call on
Movie BS with Aaron Snyder.
Ho, ho, ho. Welcome to Movie BS with Aaron Snyder, the only Christmas podcast on the internet. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder, here with my co-host, Jeff Baer.
Hi, this is Jeff Baer. That was my co-host, Eric D. Snyder. And don't worry, we're not Christmassy here. We're
just very Christmassy. This is the Christmas episode. It's being released Friday, December 25th, which is Christmas. Yep. So by the time you all hear this, we could all be dead. Who knows what will happen?
That one doesn't necessarily have to do with the other, I would assume.
But I'm just saying that we're recording this several days in advance, so that may well be the case.
Oh, question for you.
Yes.
I think this is official. I just want to make sure. How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Not a movie, correct?
No, it was a TV special.
Thank you. Okay, mm-hmm. Good. Because I think perhaps now, the 25th, as you listen to this, I might be watching The Grinch Who Stole Christmas with my son. And I just wanted to make sure it doesn't count as a movie.
No, that's not a movie. And I know you're trying to protect him from ever seeing movies. Nobody wants their son to repeat the mistakes that they have made themselves. You want to keep him away from that life, I know.
If movies have taught me anything, it's don't follow in your father's footsteps.
Mama, don't let your kids grow up to be film critics, like the old song says.
There you go.
All right, here's some Christmas movies. None of them have anything to do with Christmas, but they're coming out on Christmas.
Yep.
So let's talk Joy.
Joy. This is a story about daring women.
Oy.
That's what David Russell starts the movie by telling us. But then it's really just a focus on one woman who I think is fairly interesting in a small character study kind of way.
She's played by Jennifer Lawrence.
She is indeed. She plays a 24-year-old who's got a couple kids, an ex-husband that's living in the basement, kind of a deadbeat mom.
Spaced out mom watching soap operas in the bedroom. Yeah.
It's
the 70s. We should mention it's the 70s or 80s or something.
I think it's the 80s.
80s.
It is a cast of characters. The way that David O. Russell typically does it, I would say. A little bit overboard, loves the dysfunction, and he plays that up here with Robert De Niro.
De Niro is her father, right?
That's right. That's her father who comes back into the house to also then live in this cramped space.
Her father, of course, is divorced from her mother. Everybody, this is a very bizarre family with lots of breaking up but kind of being together and people coming and going. And it is set up like this big ensemble, which for me is part of the problem with the movie, which is that it's not an ensemble story. It's a story about Joy and what she does. But they keep trying to make it this other thing, and all it does is waste time. And there's lots of dead ends and unresolved, unwrapped up strings.
It is the story of Jennifer Lawrence trying to overcome an ensemble.
Yeah.
She's like, what? I'm in an ensemble? I'm going to break out slowly.
The actual story is Joy, this young woman, she – a little bit of an inventor. She had made – what had she – she made a dog collar that did something. It wasn't appreciated.
It released. It released if it would get caught on something.
Oh, there you go.
So for the chance for the dog to be safe, and that is actually a thing that exists, and something this real life Joy did
probably really did. My grandfather's dog actually died being strangled from his collar gotten stuck on something.
I hope so. That would listening that's your favorite Christmas story of the year. Right? Because that's a Christmas story.
The dog was coming down the chimney, dressed up like Santa. No, so if we'd had Joy's collar, the dog would still be alive today, 25 years later.
If you like family tension...
And who doesn't?
And who... Well, some people don't. Some people actually want to be happy all of the time with their family members, like you. Yeah. There's never enough family tension going on over there in the Snyderland.
It's true. We've tried.
Yeah.
I tried the gay thing. That didn't work. Somebody got divorced. No dice. Yeah.
Nothing. Everybody always sticks together and is happy. My family, we stick together, but that other part, not all the time. Not all the time.
You were saying?
So I don't know what I was saying.
Okay.
I have no clue what I was saying.
You're saying if you like family dysfunction, this movie has some of it.
Yes. And I think the problem for most is going to be there isn't a lot of joy in the family dysfunction. It's not it really just kind of grinds on you. And I think in a somewhat effective way, because I feel here's the thing. I was surprised that so many critics decided to talk about their dislike for this movie. Because I didn't feel like I had a strong pro or con with this movie. And one of the main things that they're saying is, you're right, it doesn't focus on her path completely. But what it does do is kind of give you that vibe of a 24-year-old being stuck and overwhelmed with past decisions and trying to break free of that, and how hard it is to break free, especially when you have an annoying family. And that's the story that it's trying to tell. And I think it does a pretty good job of that at times.
And I hardly even feel like that's the story it's trying to tell. I feel like the story it's trying to tell is about Joy, who the gist of it is she comes up with a new household invention. So it's a mop, new kind of mop. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to sell that. And it's the early days of QVC, the TV shopping networks and stuff.
Which, by the way, I found that kind of fascinating.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah. And there's Melissa Rivers as Joan Rivers.
That was
so that's all interesting. Yeah. But again, that stuff all gets diluted by the domestic scenes. And I think a prime example is her mother, her soap opera watching mother, who has this side thing where she eventually finds love, kind of. But that all sort of happens in the background, and there's no payoff to it. And there's no I left the movie wondering, why was that character even in the movie? And I felt like that a lot. I felt like a lot of characters and situations must have been there just because that's how it was in real life. But it just muddies the waters and dilutes the film.
I really only felt that way with Virginia Madsen playing the mom, because everybody else I feel like does serve a purpose, whether it's because of the financial ties with her dad and the new lady in his life, played by Isabella Rossellini, or her ex, which I found that here's the thing. I found it all interesting. I found it all enjoyable. But when they do this moment where they kind of carry on the story a little bit farther than you'd think it would go, I feel like there was a lot of things there that excited me more than things that I necessarily sat through.
I enjoyed watching the film well enough while it was happening.
Yeah.
Sort of my attention wandered here and there, but overall it was okay. But the more I thought about it afterward, the more unsatisfying it felt.
The more I felt, I feel that way too, and I'm going to keep holding on to how I felt during it, because there were some really positive moments from Jennifer Lawrence in this role. And there's some good laughs. And Bradley Cooper does come in and give the movie a spark. There's some quality direction going on. David O. Russell is either a really good film critic or really good at mimicking – or critic, sorry, director – or really good at mimicking other film directors. Like I can't officially decide. But he knows kind of how to manipulate and show things. And I liked how there was a lot of times where we didn't see the faces of people. Like we weren't necessarily in the world. We were on the side of it. Mm-hmm. But at the same point, there were some weird choices, such as she's kind of in a soap opera fantasy for a little bit.
Yeah.
And it disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all interesting because it's actually like that is Susan Lucci. I actually grew up watching all my children.
Yeah, the
my
mom obsessed and, with soap operas. And that just sort of and disappears
and
in the movie.
And it doesn't even fade. It just stops. And so that's the thing where it's just like, well, that didn't work. But enough of it does work for me Did you? This is the other thing. I allowed myself to read some reviews, which I rarely do after I saw it, and I was surprised that there was some complaining that Jennifer Lawrence couldn't pull off, or like the age of the character should have been older. And I never once felt like I had a problem watching a 24-year-old character struggle.
Did they say she's 24 in the movie?
I believe they said she's 24 or she's 24 in real life. Somebody commented about how like the real life Joy might have done this when she was in her mid-30s as opposed to.
Yeah. She did seem too young to have already been divorced and have kids the ages that she has. But I don't remember them saying she was 24 either.
I guess that was the thing. I didn't have a problem with a character being in her mid-20s in that life situation, if that was the case, or if I just created that specific age thing. What do you think the deal was with Melissa Rivers playing her mom? Do you think that was David O. Russell, like, loves Joan Rivers and thought that was the most respectful thing to do? Do you think he had, like, some auditions and he was like, we got to get somebody else? Or like
I don't know. I could see him going straight to Joan Rivers to see if she wanted to play her mom.
Straight to Joan Rivers
or Melissa Rivers? Yeah, sorry.
Going straight to Joan would have been interesting.
That would have been interesting because she actually died about 15 years ago. They didn't announce it until a couple years ago. But
a Muppet has been playing
a marionette. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is an interesting thing that again is in the movie for a couple of minutes and not really
right, just sort of on
the fringe. Oh, Bradley Cooper's in the movie too. P.S.
Yeah, I had mentioned that slightly when you weren't listening. I found it just enjoyable enough to give it a 7 out of 10.
I found it just enjoyable enough to give it a C+.
Yeah.
Let's talk about The Revenant.
Please.
Revenant is, I believe, only in limited release on Christmas, and it'll go wide in January.
I'm sorry, people. You might have to wait. If you're not big time like us, you might have to wait.
Well, it's not playing where we live either, I don't think.
Nah, but I did see it.
Yes, we did see it.
I saw it 1.2 times already.
How'd you see it 0.2 times? Is there a screener?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep. All right, so this is a movie that I didn't know what that word meant. Mm-hmm. Eric, did you know what that word meant?
Only because I looked it up. It came up a few months ago, and I was like, what does that word mean?
So here's a question. Is it a spoiler to say the definition of that word? Like, it's that weird thing of like...
No, in fact, I think the poster even says it.
Oh, does it?
Or one of the I saw a poster for this movie that said Revenant, and then it gave the dictionary definition of Revenant. So,
it is that weird thing of like, because that perfectly describes the very light plot of the film.
Yeah, especially considering that part of it doesn't a revenant is something that comes back as if from the dead to come often to get revenge or whatever. But yeah, but that doesn't happen until like the last half hour of the 2.5 hour movie.
Right.
So it is a bit of a spoiler, I suppose. Letting you know what's to come.
Cat's out of the bag, people. Mm-hmm. All right, so anyway, here's what we got. We got Leonardo DiCaprio, and we have the 1800s, 1820s,
1840s, or so, yeah. Yeah, okay.
And he's a guy that he gets stuff done. You know what I mean, right? He's a frontiersman.
Works with like a bunch of fur trappers or something.
Yeah,
gathering pelts.
He's the guy that knows where things are, how things work, and he's good at it.
He can survive in the wilderness.
He really can.
Up to a point.
Right. So he's along for this ride. And this ride starts frantically right away with a wonderful scene where Native Americans are trying to get the fur that these trappers have already gathered.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, oh my goodness, it is amazingly frantic. Like, I am nervous as all heck when I'm watching this.
I left the movie very nervous that Indians were going to attack me. I'm watching for arrows whizzing out of the trees.
You know how you keep feeling like, all right, I've seen every possible arrow attack, whether mm-hmm. there's like flooding through the sky or whatever. It felt authentically new. Like this carnage and franticness was really good. And then...
Leonardo, by the way, his name is Hugh Glass. which is almost Hugh Jass, which is great. Hugh Glass, and he's got a half-breed son, half-Indian son, with a burned face. That's what they call him. They call him a half-breed. I know that's not, I don't mean that.
I feel like,
it's not
I feel
nice,
like that's what you would call
him. No, that's what, they call him in the, it's what was,
yeah, Jeff, know,
that's the derogatory term that they used to call people then.
I'm allowed.
He was half-Indian.
Yeah, and this amazing-looking film then goes about with survival.
They're they're trying to get back to wherever they're going.
Right.
But Hugh Glass becomes separated from them, suffers an injury.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Boy.
My gosh. There's an animal, and there's...
We're not going to spoil what animal it is.
Oh my gosh! But the damage this squirrel does is just
I was gonna say
shark, a whale.
It's a whale attack out in the forest
with the Thor. It's the same thing. It's a
in the heart of the sea, in the heart of the forest.
Anyway,
well, there's a brutal, just a brutal animal attack.
And I actually wrote down keep breathing.
You had to write down a note to yourself to keep breathing?
It was that thing of just like, yeah, you forget. You are so caught up in this moment. And that's the thing that I felt with this movie that it does so well. It has shocking moments. And there are a few of them, probably no better than Leonardo DiCaprio's main injury. Mm-hmm. But you are waiting from time to time. But when you're waiting with wonderful music and great visuals. I didn't mind sitting in this world.
The director is Alejandro González Iñárritu, who last made Birdman.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the camera work in this. The camera is usually unnaturally steady. Like even when it's right there in the midst of the action and the chaos and the mayhem – and the camera itself is unnervingly calm and steady, sort of floating around omnisciently. But it's right there up in the action, which is very cool and puts mm-hmm. you right there in it.
And we should say there's definite tension because once injuries happen to some certain people, it's a matter of, okay, within this group, what do we do? We're in the middle of nowhere. It's going to be hard enough for us to survive. Do we really try to keep these people along for the ride?
Mm-hmm.
And at the front of that is Tom Hardy's John Fitzgerald, who really is he's a guy who's looking out for number one.
And yeah.
And his hair is not that attractive. Those are the two most important things.
And Tom Hardy's is working what sounds like a Baltimore accent to me. I believe mm-hmm. that's what he's going for.
I didn't mind it. I didn't.
No,
mind
he
it.
Has Tom Hardy. Just he has a pouch of various indecipherable accents that he can pull out anytime. All he wants is for you to not understand him in whatever accent he may be using.
Yes,
that's his main goal. He's like, there and. So he's sort of the main antagonist, well, after nature itself. Because in the middle part of the movie, it's more of like a survival film. Like, how do I survive and take care of myself out there in the wilderness?
It very much reminded me of the classics of Jeremiah Johnson, Into the Wild.
I'm just thinking starker than either of those. Like, more dire and deadly and gross.
And it's got more Will Poulter than either of those two movies. And it's good to see him being an actor. I like this guy.
To a dancer? But,
just the fact that when you see a kid from ever ago, like mm-hmm. son of Rambo,
yeah,
like you don't know where his future will be, but it's been really good.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him growing up into movies.
Yep.
And then eventually we get to the part where the Revenant and he needs revenge and so forth.
Right.
It is, as we said, a long movie, just over 2.5 hours. And it is essentially a very simple movie.
Oh, goodness,
and
yes.
I had a bit of a, oh, is that it? Kind of sense at the end. That's all you were building toward? Just that?
All right.
A little bit of a letdown. Given the time investment and given the intensity of everything, I kind of wanted more. I don't know, more release, more catharsis, more insight, more something in the end other than just, the basic message that comes across.
I was totally fine with the basic message that comes across. mainly because of those very shocking moments that the movie keeps presenting to mm-hmm. me. And for some reason, I fell into the idea of it's going to be this simple. I don't know why. It was just as we were going along, I just kept thinking, like, I bet this has like one of those kind of like quiet indie endings, even though most of the time when you get the quiet indie ending, it's with like an 88-minute runtime instead of this epic runtime. But yeah, luckily, I felt like that was coming, and so therefore, I was just happy to be on that wonderful wilderness ride.
Yeah,
that I would never personally want to do in my life, and that's why it's nice to sit in a comfy movie theater and watch things.
Oh yeah, I would never go outside. I still like it a lot overall, and I give it a B.
I like it when you're do you plan on the octave change, or is it just it's a natural, like when you said B, it was a nice high B.
I can't really explain the inner workings of everything.
Just saying, it's a 9 out of 10. All right. You got it wrong. Okay. It's a 9. Hmm. It's not a B.
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 Oh, that just hurt people's ears. How dare you? And on Christmas, nonetheless.
And then another movie that I assume is limited release.
Oh,
it seems like a small one.
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. It's called 45 Years, and it takes place in real time over the course of 45 years. Just kidding, it doesn't.
That's a good one.
Thanks.
It does start, this is the truth, it does start with the noise of a slideshow clicker.
Mm, the old, slides. Slide that carousel.
That is so nostalgic for me. Like, did you have to gather and watch the slides? And
yeah,
some would
slides.
Be upside down, and your dad would.
Yeah,
pull
I remember slides.
That's a noise it's just going to be gone. Generational.
So we got this couple.
Those were the days
in England. Been married 45 years. Coming up on their big 45th anniversary party in a week.
Mm-hmm.
It's Kate and Jeff.
Yeah, it's Geoff, but he pronounces it Jeff, which is whatever. So it's Kate and Jeff.
Charlotte Rampling and Tom Courtenay.
Lovely. Lovely performances by both of them. It's, you know, good stuff to see old people act, I guess. You know, that sort of thing. And, she's clearly an old school teacher from the same town. And she'll go on walks, but he'll stay at home. And It all just seems like delicate and nice and sweet and you wonder what's going to happen.
We get a thorough sense of what their life and the relationship is like. They still love each other. They're older. They still love each other, and they're both intellectuals. He's reading Kierkegaard at one point. We get the idea he was sort of a firebrand liberal at some point, maybe cooled off a little bit in his old age. Then there's they get a letter. Concerning something from his past, from before he even met Kate, this previous girlfriend he had. And Kate has never mentioned her to Kate.
Uh-uh, that's not true.
Well, he says he thinks he did, but...
Yeah, but I mean, come on, it's been 45 years plus, so like, who knows?
I feel like Kate would remember if he'd ever mentioned, oh, I was in love with another woman before I met you, and then she died.
Well, I think he might have mentioned the existence of a previous...
Yeah.
But maybe not gone into details.
Maybe,
And it is...
Kate is understandably...
flustered.
Flustered and kind of hurt, and what a big thing not to have mentioned. And why didn't you mention it? Because she's dead, so what difference does it make? And,
right.
Yeah.
And then the really interesting, I think, for me, things that come with it are, like, he'll start to do... His personality has just changed a little, and you know... The reason he's acting different is because of this letter and because of thinking of this past he hasn't really explored forever.
Yeah, these old thoughts and feelings and memories are bubbling up.
I will say, I actually felt like this is simply a solid movie. That's mainly what I thought. For a while, I felt like it was building up to something that could really be a tight, serious, intense drama. And it just didn't. It didn't go that full way. It didn't want to go that full way.
Yeah, it's more of a quiet, like you said, a character study without a lot of action and without a lot of like big drama.
Right. The big drama is, hey, we're going to have a party where we celebrate 45 years of marriage. That's right. That's the big drama. How will everything be affected by this?
So so much of it is internal, and it's really yes. on Charlotte Rampling, who's a great actress. And it's so much of her and her face and her expressions and what's going through her mind as she's dealing with all these complicated feelings. And then the husband, Colm Courtney, is also very good.
Very good. And actually, I felt like, I mean, she did have the quiet moments. He had a little bit more to do in mannerisms and whatnot. And I got the sense that it was like, didn't you feel like, okay, he's, I mean, just because it felt like the reason he wasn't necessarily going on daily walks was because of a deterioration physically, or maybe there was something mentally, or like, you know what I mean? Like she seemed more hip and with it than him. But yet at the same point, that created an intrigue of like, well, what is he capable of thinking and feeling and remembering properly? Right. So I did like that as well too. Yeah, there's not a lot. If you're, you know, willing to have a tiny non-lightsaber movie in your life, why not this one is kind of the feeling there.
Yeah, and it is quite good. And it's 95 minutes, so it's not super long. But again, it does not move. It does not move swiftly. The time does not fly by. It's very contemplative, right. And we're sitting and enjoying life with these people. So you've got to be into it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is quite good.
Yeah, if you don't like old people, I would not sit through this movie. Sure. Like if you're one of those anti oldies,
or if you can't like swallow your disdain for the olds long enough to watch the movie.
Well, and if you're not even capable of swallowing anymore, then this probably. Maybe you're too old.
Well, but then old people would enjoy it even more because it's got their kind in it. Old people love movies about old people.
Yeah, no, they do. But if they're like literally can't swallow, like if it's all just machines at this point, well, I feel like you got to do other stuff with your time than see 45 years.
Well, you probably can't even leave the house very much at that point.
Yeah.
So anyway, I give it a B+.
I give it a 7 out of 10. Oh, it was one away from being BS approved.
Oh.
Tough break, 45 years. Try to get them next time. I'm kidding. There's not going to be a next time. They're going to die soon. Okay. Next up, a movie called Concussion. I only saw it. Or maybe Eric saw it and simply forgot.
Because of concussions.
Yeah.
No, they didn't screen it for us regular people until I was already out of town for Christmas.
This is what I wrote down before the movie started. Hmm. I wonder with Will Smith's age if he's really going to even be able to play a football player believably.
Yeah, he's not a football player. Even I know that.
No, he is not. No. This is the lovely world of not doing any homework before you sit through a movie. He plays a pathologist who actually starts to unravel the mystery of what is going on with these former NFL players.
I love that it was a mystery why all the ex-football players were all dumb with brain damage.
Well, no, but not only that, why were they suddenly acting out violently? And not suddenly, but it was in the – like it was trackable. Mm-hmm. It was potentially trackable. And this is a guy who just didn't want to quit in that world. He didn't care about football, and that's like pretty dang awesome here.
I'm on board with that.
Because in his opinion, it just comes across as like, well, wait a minute. I just found out something that I think football would really like to know. I should help them.
Right.
Like, that's where his passion
is. You got to tell the NFL how dangerous their sport is.
Dr. Bennett Omalu?
Omalu?
Omalu, I believe. And Will Smith has...
Is he doing an accent? Is he from Africa or Haiti or somewhere?
I want to say Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And that would be awful if I'm wrong. I would kind of hate myself for not landing that correctly. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's what I'm remembering. And he nails the accent, 100%. Will Smith, he kind of fades away here, and he's just an actor.
Yeah.
It's a really good performance.
He is from Nigeria.
Yes.
The doctor.
And we get a little bit of a real-life football player, Mike Webster. And that was the thing that I also didn't even realize was like how much – that this would be front of stage, real finger pointing at the NFL.
Doesn't the NFL come off pretty bad?
The NFL comes off pretty bad, but at the same point, there is an awareness in this movie of, but then again, the machine's still going. And part of the reason the machine is still going is because this country loves football.
Right.
So it's not just like, well, the NFL is covering everything up and they're evil. It's not just that in this movie. It is weird because considering right now the NFL is the most popular sport in America, I don't know how many people are going to want to see it. And then if it affects them properly, like, what does that mean for them? Like, it is like a lot of people are going to choose to stay away, I think, from this movie, even though it is Will Smith. And even though he does a lovely job with this.
Or they'll see it and and say, oh, that is too bad. Tsk, tsk. And then not change their behavior, which is what we usually do.
We have also Albert Brooks in this as kind of his a supervisor at work, and he's kind of like setting things in motion in the sense of like, look, I love and respect you. Think about this path you're going down. Alec Baldwin plays another doctor in this film and is very effective in his role as well. And there is also a lovely romance that is just kind of peppered in there to give the movie a little bit more something to do. It doesn't feel 100% necessary, but at the same point, you like it.
Is that with Google Mbatha Raw?
Yes, it is. That's interesting. And a recalling of like, there's some certain facts, that the movie gets into in the basic sense of like, well, here's how a human being can get a concussion and here's, the impact that football players cause each other, things like that. Like how jacked up segments used to work. Jacked up was like, on ESPN. It was just like, you know, here's all these headshots in the NFL, and it used to be praised. And how culture is shifting that way. So I'm somebody that has actually – this is the movie for me because I am slightly fading away from my fandom with the NFL. Because I've read enough, it's just like, well, I don't want my son playing football as it's currently constructed. And I actually believe a decade from now, football will be different. It will have to be changed.
As long as it's still boring and takes forever. That's the important thing.
Right. And that's the thing,
change
too.
That.
You also realize it is kind of boring to watch a little bit compared to some of the speed of other sports. But anyway,
the movie itself,
8 out of 10. Will Smith's a very good performance in this. Anyway, there we go. Concussion.
And then I saw Point Break, which you wisely chose not to see. This is a remake of a stupid movie from 1991 that a lot of people like.
How dare you?
I don't dislike the original Point Break, but it is a stupid movie. And now here's a new Point Break that's even more stupid and that I do dislike considerably.
I have a feeling, am I correct that the main reason you dislike it, is it because it takes itself more seriously than the original? I watched the preview, and that was the thing that I kept like feeling. It was like, you think you're the most important movie ever?
It takes itself too seriously, and the big problem here, it's a new FBI agent called Johnny Utah, played by a guy named Luke Bracey.
Okay.
Who looks like they got him by photocopying Keanu Reeves a bunch of times, like a copy of a copy of a copy. And they came up with Luke Bracey, and he had been an extreme, what do you call himself? An extreme sport polyathlete.
Yeah.
Is what he was. Mostly motocross. And you know how these movies always start with a brief prologue before the opening credits where the hero, and his friend are somewhere and a friend dies like while they're doing something dangerous. And so now he's haunted because his friend died.
You know what you just brought up to me? Hmm. Cliffhanger.
Every movie? Yeah. You know, they all start with that. This has the funniest one of those I've seen.
Oh.
Because it's – no, not on purpose. Because it's so fast and cursory. It's like they're like, okay, we got to throw this out there. All right. Here's a guy and his friend, and now he's dead. Okay. Boom. Point Break. Now let's go. It's so obligatory.
Like, how many seconds do you think it actually does last?
I mean, it's – I feel like it's only maybe 2 minutes.
Okay.
This prologue before the guy dies without much fanfare. But so now it's several years later and Johnny Utah is becoming an FBI agent and there are these crimes that are being apparently perpetrated by fellow extreme sport polyathletes.
Oh, I thought they all knew better.
Yeah. And so here's the problem. He realized that these crimes are being committed not like to steal the money or the diamonds or whatever, but to fulfill some list of 8 extreme sport things that people have tried to do. And it's a way of like reaching nirvana. It's this spiritual thing.
Nice.
So there's a lot of touchy-feely nonsense about like trying to harness the power of the earth and all this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Give it to me.
And so when Bodhi and his crew steal diamonds and money, they always just throw it out to the people. They don't keep it for themselves because they're just doing it for the thrill of it, which is fine, but that makes me not really care if we catch them. Because, like, they're not violent criminals.
They're Robin Hoods?
They're not evil.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you know. All right, catch them if you can. Yeah, they shouldn't break the law. But I'm not, like, dying to see. So Johnny Utah infiltrates them, of course, and does a lot of extreme things. What do they got? There's extreme surfing. There's some extreme rock climbing. There's some extreme snowboarding.
Now, would you actually consider everything extreme, or were some things not as extreme as they had led on to be?
They were fairly extreme, and I will say that all that stuff of them doing things in mountains and oceans and stuff all looks great. And they go to there's a bunch. They seem to have done some globetrotting to make the movie, so it all looks very cool. The things they do, but I could not care less about Johnny Utah and his friend Bodhi and all the mumbo jumbo about you got to choose your own path and. A man who pushes boundaries ultimately finds them. And he says, I owe Bodhi for saving me. And the girl says, we don't believe in owing. Oh, sometimes there's a girl. There's a girl sometimes.
Sometimes there's a girl.
Yeah. So just a lot. It just made me keep going, oh, shut up. Just shut up. Just shut up, all of you.
Here's a question. And this is a spoiler alert. So if anybody's planning on seeing Point Break, skip ahead 15 seconds. Eric's going to talk 15 seconds about the end of the movie after I finish this question to him. Does it end with Bodhi surfing a giant wave and getting lost in the wave?
Approximately. It actually changes the story as well as I can remember. I think it changes it a lot from the original, but it does have that ending. And the other thing that it does that the original it has Johnny Utah firing his gun in the air and yelling Bodhi or no or whatever he yells.
No!
Yeah, it does recreate that moment.
Nice. Okay. What do you give it?
It's stupid. It's a D. Ooh. Could not end over enough. Could not get over fast enough is what I tried to say. Just shut up, everybody.
Okay. Daddy's home.
I was sorry to have missed this because it's got my favorite, Mark Wahlberg.
No.
Oh, Will Ferrell. Yeah.
There you go.
The screening was on a Sunday afternoon. Who's got time for that on a Sunday afternoon?
Come on. Will Ferrell is he's a stepdad. Mm-hmm. And he's married to Linda Cardellini from Freaks and Geeks.
Sure.
Which I guess she can play that. That's sure, they can play a married couple now.
Pretty sure she was also Velma in the Scooby-Doo movies.
Yeah, I think so too. So he's Brad, and he's got a heart of gold, and he just tries to be the best stepdad possible, and he wishes he could have his own kids, but something really freaking stupid prevents him from being able to do that.
What is it?
And he is at the dentist office and accidentally gets a bunch of images, x-rays taken of his junk, which leaves his testicles non-operational.
Oh, okay.
It's stupid. It's like a stupid scene. And sadly, here's the thing.
My grandfather's dog couldn't have kids for the same reason.
Happy Christmas. All right. So here's – you have no idea with these movies. It's like, okay, are you going to be dumb? Are you going to be intelligent? Are you going to be what's going on? And one of the keys as far as separating those two scenarios, as far as what path are you heading down, fairly early on – the kid in the movie, the boy, of course, is getting bullied by slightly older kids.
Yeah.
And Will Ferrell gives the kid some advice, which involves doing trust falls with bullies.
Okay. So it's going to be a stupid movie.
It's going to be a stupid movie. That being said, there is some fun that comes of it. It is just a little while back, I spoke of a movie with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, and it's just like, oh, it feels kind of lowest common denominator, like you're tapping into the Adam Sandler world instead of that world that you're better than.
Better than this, Will Ferrell, and I guess also Mark Wahlberg.
No, I don't necessarily think Mark Wahlberg's necessarily better than this. Sometimes he can be. But yeah, it's the exaggerated beyond belief instead of just exaggerated. Mm-hmm. And Mark Wahlberg comes back and he's the biological father and he wants a relationship now.
I'm guessing he's all like cool and fun.
He's super cool and fun, kind of almost looks like a superhero. I don't know why the choice was long hair slicked back, but I think that's a terrible look for him. And I know that's really superficial, but if I have to stare at Mark Wahlberg for a whole movie, I don't want that hair on his head. Period.
This is the guy who made his career walk around in his underwear. I think it's okay to be superficial when we talk
Thank
about
you.
Him.
So yeah, that was a stupid choice, amongst other stupid choices. Like, they have some big set pieces that just don't garner laughs. Like, there's one thing with a motorcycle that the motorcycle plows through a house with Will Ferrell on it, and he ends up stuck in a wall. And all of this stuff is meant to elicit a lot of belly laughs, but it just makes me kind of, like, sad that this was their best attempt. Mm-hmm. But then there's little tiny one-liners, just like with, you know, the Amy Poehler situation.
Little Sisters, that movie was called.
Sisters. Little tiny lines, very good in this movie, but they don't sustain enough. And there's not enough real authentic humor played with the concept of a stepdad really wanting to be the best dad possible, and then the real biological dad coming back and wanting a role as well.
Which is rife with potential.
And that's the thing, that it's just like, oh, really? Instead, you're going with this idea that Will Ferrell gets super drunk in a super public setting and really says some awful things? Like, that's the direction you want to go for? I was surprised by the ending, because it did have enough laughs. And there was enough heart in the ending to make it worthwhile. But all that did was bump it up to a 5 out of 10.
All right.
So there we go.
All right. We gave you a couple of questions of the week. And don't worry, your assignments aren't due yet. You still have another week. But just to reiterate what those questions are, first, we want to know your favorite movies of 2015. And Jeff, tell them your new idea.
So we asked for the top three, and we're going to continue that. It's just the top three. But what we're going to do is we're going to turn that into the Mount Rushmore of 2015. So we're going to take the top four and award those on our little mount.
Yeah.
And then hopefully, you know, somebody at home will do a little photoshopping, and then we'll add that to the Mount Rushmore. Because as you guys know, on our website, moviebs.com, we have a Mount Rushmore link where you can see what our listeners voted, like the, you know, the four best holiday films or the four best horror films yeah. and
so
stuff
we'll do,
like that.
And we'll do one for every year. So yeah, we'll take the four movies that get the most mentions as you each tell us your three favorites.
That's
and
right.
We'll compile all those. So, yes, your three favorite movies of the year. And then also we'd like to know if there are any movies you saw this year just because we told you to.
Yeah.
Let us know about that. It makes us feel good to know that we've successfully propagandized you.
Both of us enjoy patting each other on the back, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. We do enjoy that. And then we have a question from a listener in our new segment that we call Questions from Listeners.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba.
And this question, this is from Horatio Q. Magnolia again. He asked us a few. He says, what advice would you give to someone pursuing a career as a movie critic / film writer? Would you recommend it?
Goodness.
I will say right off the bat, it is not something that you should go into if you want to make a lot of money.
Right. Right. If you want to easily financially support yourself or potentially loved ones, mm-hmm. Look elsewhere.
Do anything else.
Anything else.
And the movie critic world has changed so much just mm-hmm. in the 16 years that I've been doing it, which I guess is a long time when I say it out loud. But there are hardly any like full-time film critic jobs around anymore.
Yeah, it is something that there is a lot of fun with this. There really is. It is very enjoyable to watch something and then care about formulating your opinions in telling others about it. Like that's a fun thing to get to do.
Right.
But
you probably won't get to do it.
You won't get to do it in the way that you would want. Like, there's so many people now that are just like, okay, I have to create a news story about something I don't care about because it will get clicks. And, like, that's a thing that has nothing to do with being a film critic. Or, like, overanalyzing a trailer before you, you know, before you see the movie, which has nothing to do with being a film critic.
Yeah, a lot of what you have to do is going to be writing other stuff about movies that aren't reviews.
Yeah. And that's not to say that it's not possible, but like the better thing, I would say is one, focus on journalism. Two, focus on improving your editing skills always and forever, because people need editors at a newspaper. Editing doesn't exist online in that same way anymore for a lot of these smaller publications, which is a sad thing. So you really have to be your own editor, because people will not read you if you can't write.
Unless you're telling them Star Wars rumors, then they will read you, yes, no matter how illiterate you
and,
are.
And potentially being an arts critic overall, like really expand what that can mean for you. But to just focus on being a film critic, it sadly feels like that's more of a side passion.
It's too specific.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the main thing is going to be writing. And this was true before, but it's especially true now. A good film critic is going to be a good writer and very knowledgeable about film. But if you choose one or the other, it's more important to be a good writer.
Absolutely.
Than it is to love movies or know a lot about movies. Yeah. Which, again, you should do that too. But the writing, being able to express yourself, is going to be the more important thing. So if you're not a good writer, then don't do it.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So there's enough bad writers out there already.
Yes, there's plenty.
So there you go. That's this new segment called Questions from Listeners, I think is what I said.
Now, Eric, what if somebody at home just heard that segment and would be like, well, how do I send them a question? I don't get it.
Well, you don't have to whine about it. It's easy.
Well, that's what they did.
Well, first, check yourself before you wreck yourself. And then second, you can just email us at moviebspdx@gmail.com. Or post it on Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
Send us a telegram.
And we can always we'll do that too. We'll toss that up there on the Facebook once again, so you can just fill it in there for your ease and enjoyment. But also keep this in mind. Doesn't have to be movie related with this segment. You can ask us anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything about whatever. You know what the word anything means. Ask us anything. There you go.
Should you do what I did in previous weeks and describe?
What if we say anything?
Ad nauseam.
An example of a thing you could ask would be about our personal lives, or the cars we drive, or the furniture in our houses.
Or really anything.
Our families, or like anything. You know, when I say anything. Think of all the things and choose one of those things, and that would be a thing you could ask us.
There you go.
And that wraps up the Christmas edition of Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. We talked about a bunch of movies, it seems like. Joy was okay.
Yeah.
The Revenant's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's brutal. There is some brutal stuff in it.
Sorry if you didn't understand that from our description, because we didn't really talk about the violence. Visceral.
Yeah.
Visceral violence.
45 years, a good, mature adult drama. Concussion.
I think what you just said was, watch out, it's boring. But
it's good. It's a good drama for grown-ups.
It's boring.
But it's definitely for mature grown-ups.
It's good.
Yes,
it's
it is good.
Concussion's good.
All right. And
if you want to sit through a movie telling you you're doing it wrong by watching the NFL.
which I don't need a movie to tell me that.
Right.
Point Break is not good, and Daddy's Home, you say, was mediocre.
Yes.
So next week we'll be back with the answers to your questions for the end of the year, and with our top 10 lists for the year, and with a couple more reviews for our first show of 2016.
Oh, I can't wait for 2016.
You only have a week more to wait. Yeah. So for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.